Pope Francis hospitalized and using whatever strength he has left to attack Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. Plus, every Palestinian is a Muslim terrorist, right? So what about this guy? A Muslim? No. A terrorist? Hardly. Uh-oh, there goes the narrative. Tonight, two Catholic bishops in Jerusalem finally set the record straight on what's really going on in Israel. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Michael Matt, and this is the Remnant Underground. So, even though His Holiness has been in and out of the hospital lately with shortness of breath and bronchitis and other things, Pope Francis has somehow managed to squirrel away enough time to send a long letter to the U.S. bishops this week, warning against Donald Trump's border policy, arguing that, quote, the act of deporting people who in many cases have left their own land for reasons of extreme poverty, insecurity, exploitation, persecution, or serious deterioration of the environment damages the dignity of many men and women. I really love this last one, don't you? It's fantastic. The deterioration of the environment. This was a favorite of Al Gore's back in the day. You know that open borders are absolutely necessary so that we can welcome in all those people fleeing from rising sea levels
and melting the ice and raising the sea level and causing these waves of climate refugees predicted to reach 1 billion in this century.
But he also went on to tell the U.S. bishops that it is wrong to identify the illegal status of migrants with criminality.
Now, again, this is joking around with terms. It's like saying that people are undocumented. Well, yeah, it's not that they just lack paperwork. No one likes paperwork. They're here having broken a law. So there is criminality. And of course, in addition to that, every country has a right to decide what it regards as criminal and what it doesn't regard as criminal.
They trash the Catholic Church. They let it be trampled on by their globalist friends day in and day out, obviously minimizing the civilizing influence of the church in third world countries, in every country, but especially in third world countries, poorer countries, until finally, what are we left with? Well, where the church used to be able to maintain some law and order based on God's law and the Ten Commandments and soup kitchens and schools and orphanages and hospitals and taking care of these people, now we're left with a desperate and mostly godless people. Thank you very much, Vatican II and the modernists who run the church. Mostly fallen away Catholics, if they identify as Catholics at all, you know. And these people are running for the borders, fighting with the cops, yes, becoming criminals, breaking into other people's countries, right? Risking their lives. Let's not forget that. The number of people who die trying to make these journeys from all over the world, right? You know, this is called Christless chaos. And guess who's responsible for it? The folks running the Vatican right now, who never even mention the fact that all the religious orders, all the priests, all the nuns who used to run the hospitals and the orphanages, they're gone. They're all gone. There are no vocations anymore. It's social uplift and life coaching from the church, from the Vatican. And now they're blaming Donald Trump. Blaming Donald Trump for trying to protect this country from the chaos that these modernist, socialist, globalists have unleashed on the formerly Catholic countries, causing them to empty out. Why is no one asking those questions? Why are these countries, formerly Catholic countries, why have they become such hell holes that everybody wants to get the hell out of there as fast as they can and risk life and limb, jumping border walls to get into our country? It's because they're no longer Catholic. Nobody's following God's law. Nobody's following nature's law. So why would you follow international law when it comes to borders? During the run-up to the last election, you'll remember, Francis couldn't even decide which is more evil, borders around a country or the slaughter of babies in their mother's wombs.
Ambedue sono contro la vita, sia quello che butta via i migranti, sia quello che uccide i bambini. Ambedue sono contro la vita e si deve scegliere il male minore. Chi è il male minore? Quella signora o quel signore? Non so.
Think about this. This is the moral and spiritual leader of the world, supposedly, the Christian world. And where does this kind of crap leave a very practical and pragmatic politician like Donald Trump? Where does it leave him? Do you think he's You sitting at the feet of Pope Francis and say, tell me more, Francis. What else must I do? You think he's doing that? No. You know what he's thinking? You know what Donald Trump is thinking? This is what the crisis was during the run-up to the last election, because I got what he was doing. You know, he's thinking that if even popes are lightening up on things like gay marriage and abortion, well, why shouldn't we, the politicians?
Pro-life people and pro-abortion people are debating about what y'all are going to do with the abortifacient drugs that some would say haven't been studied enough, especially among young people. They're over the counter. Biden loosened the restrictions on them. What will you do on that issue?
President Trump hasn't made a decision about that issue yet. What he's asked me to do is study the safety and study the safety signals. And I think that that's worth doing. During the Biden administration, the NIH did something that was inexcusable, which is to tell doctors and patients not to report injuries.
No. I know what you're thinking, because it's the same thing I'm thinking. Well, Mr. Secretary, we certainly know what those evil little pills are going to do to babies. We know it's not safe for babies. They're not safe for babies. There's a 100% lethality rate, in fact. And that's why they need to be taken off the market, especially by a Catholic guy who wants to make America healthy again. Let's let the babies live, first of all, shall we? So that's that. But nevertheless, I guess I'm a glasses half full enough of a guy to say, is this a slight indication that Trump is getting ready to roll back a little on this, take the abortion pills possibly off the market eventually? I mean, let's hope so. And certainly that's what we called on them to do not too long ago. Why is it when Trump and Vance, when they approve mifepristone, there is a possibility that this being a supercharged election year, that they didn't fully understand what this little evil pill is all about. So I want to just spend a few minutes catching people up on what it's about, because there are some appointments now that have been made that would at least suggest that this administration may well pull back from any support for, again, this evil little pill. Wouldn't it be great if the bishops, the vaunted Catholic bishops, would also take it upon themselves to pressure politicians like Donald Trump in the same way? I guess that's not going to happen now because they're too busy following the money.
Cardinal Michael Cerny leads the Vatican Dicastery for Promoting Integral Human Development. He says every government has the right to review its foreign aid budget, but that abruptly breaking commitments to already funded programs puts millions of lives at risk around the globe.
A crackdown is a terrible way to administer affairs, and much less to administer justice. And so I'm very sorry that many people are being hurt and indeed terrorized by the measures. And I can only hope that the church in each place is able to help them and, if possible, even protect them.
And did you catch what he said there at the end? The Trump administration is terrorizing people.
I'm very sorry that many people are being hurt and indeed terrorized.
So I've said it before, and I will say it again. You know, these guys, they present a clear and present danger to the world, to all of us, to our children. And no, we're not going to buy into this nonsense about we don't care about the other and they do. They don't give a rat's keister about the other. They care about the money that comes in from pretending to care about the other, okay? Like, this country is founded by immigrants. I'm the grandson of immigrants. Very proud of that fact. We have no problem with the other. My grandfather and grandmother came over from the old country. They learned the language and they followed the rules and never became criminals. We're very proud of that heritage. We're going to talk about that in a minute after a word on tonight's sponsor. The sponsor of tonight's Underground, friends, is America's pro-life phone company, Charity Mobile. They've got 30 years in the business of helping the unborn. Now, Roe may be gone, but the pro-life movement still needs our support, and Charity Mobile sends 5% of your monthly plan price to the pro-life, pro-family charity of your choice, including, by the way, The Remnant, if you so desire. So support the causes that you care about while you enjoy nationwide coverage on America's most reliable network. All of Charity Mobile's monthly plans now are priced under $50 before taxes and surcharges. And if you don't want data, there's a straight talk and text plan for you too. So go to charitymobile.com/RTV and check them out. And if you use the code RTV at checkout, you will get a free phone, free shipping. It's a great deal. So again, go to charitymobile.com/RTV and use the code RTV at checkout. The link is in the description box below. So please support our sponsor, Charity Mobile. So I want to like take one more little crack at sort of establishing for this show, the purpose of this show, what we're trying to do, sort of editorial policy moving forward, you know, with respect to the Trump administration, the Trump phenomenon now, which is a global phenomenon, obviously. If you want a Catholic press that speaks Catholic social doctrine to political power in a post-Christian world, then stick around. Stick around. Because I see that that's our job. You know, we're not just content creators. We're not podcasters, right? We're publishers of a Catholic newspaper. Been doing it for 60 years, okay? My family's been running Catholic newspapers for 160 years in this country, you know? And we've always tried to hold politicians accountable, at least to the best of our abilities, because that's our job, right? I disagreed with Trump on a number of things. Warp speed, for example, the first time around. I disagreed with him vehemently. And today, well, look what happened.
So this first executive order, it prohibits federal funding for COVID-19 mandates, vaccine mandates in schools.
Okay, and that will meaning they want to clear that up, yep. The discrepancy.
So any schools that require students to be vaccinated with COVID-19 shot, then there's no more federal funding, so.
Okay. Okay, that solves that problem.
And just like that, trust the science is over. Dr. Fauci is gone. We were right, right? Now, we were right to resist. And of course, most of you did the same. And it works. That's what I mean. It works. A couple of years ago, critics of this show vehemently were telling me to stop it, to shut up about the Ukraine-NATO debacle. What are you, pro-Putin? He's KGB, Michael Matt. What's the matter with you? Remember all that? So I told them at the time, you'll recall on this show, to pound sand. And look what's going on now.
I think President Trump is increasingly aware that Zelensky is simply a crook and a criminal. I think probably, Musk and others have probably told him about the billions of dollars stolen that have now shown up in bank accounts outside of Ukraine. And I think President Trump said, look, we're not going to reverse the gains of the Russians. The borders are going to have to change. Well, that's one good step in the right direction.
So let's review. First of all, that one. Trump is trying to end NATO's war on Russia, which is what it's always been, ever since Lindsey Graham and Amy Klobuchar and John McCain declared war on Putin back in 2016, 2017, when they were in Ukraine. Declaring war on Putin. I'm not even going to show you the clip again because we showed it so many times. You have to be completely brain dead to still be in denial about that. So this is a good thing. Number two, he may be pulling back on the abortion compromise that divided the base during the run-up to the election.
I agree with President Trump that every abortion is a tragedy. I agree with him that we cannot be a moral nation if we have 1.2 million abortions a year. I agree with him that the states should control abortion. President Trump has told me that he wants to end late-term abortions, and he wants to protect conscience exemptions, and that he wants to end federal funding for abortions here or abroad. That's Title 10. I serve at the pleasure of the president. I'm going to implement his policies.
And right now, J.D. Vance is over there in Europe calling out the radical pro-aborts on that side of the pond.
And perhaps most concerningly, I look to our very dear friends, the United Kingdom, where the backslide away from conscience rights has placed the basic liberties of religious Britons in particular in the crosshairs. A little over 2 years ago, the British government charged Adam Smith Connor, a 51-year-old physiotherapist and an army veteran, with the heinous crime of standing 50 meters from an abortion clinic and silently praying for 3 minutes. Adam was found guilty of breaking the government's new buffer zones law, which criminalizes silent prayer and other actions that could influence a person's decision within 200 meters of an abortion facility. This last October, just a few months ago, the Scottish government began distributing letters to citizens whose houses lay within so-called safe access zones. warning them that even private prayer within their own homes may amount to breaking the law.
And now you'd be hard-pressed not to see that as a pretty good thing, right? Which brings us to Israel. Unfortunately, this is the mother of all conspiracies, as far as I'm concerned. And on this one, on Israel, Donald Trump is dead wrong.
He's committed unconditionally to Israel. This is something that became very, very clear early on. Go back to the Republican convention. And remember this speech that was given with this giant Israeli flag behind that said Israel first. And I think it's very clear that if you were going to serve in this administration, you had to be had to sign on for the Israel first agenda. And that's what he's implementing. Now, the bad news here, Natalie, is that we poisoned the well in the Middle East. Virtually nobody trusts us. Everybody thinks that we're the enemy. They all know that without us, without our willingness to underwrite the Israelis and provide the equipment and bombs to them, nothing would happen.
Trump is up to his eyeballs in these Christian Zionist lunatics. I really hope that changes. I hope he figures that out in time, but until he does, we're going to keep speaking out.
Christian Zionism is centered around an end-of-the-world interpretation of Christianity, the belief in the return of Jewish people to Israel, leading to the second coming of Jesus Christ. It is one of the common factors that binds Christian Zionists with Zionism.
Christian Zionism predates Jewish Zionism by at least 50 years, and today dominates the Zionist movement at least 10 to 1, probably nearer 20, 30 to 1. For every Jewish Zionist, there are 20 or 30 Christian Zionists. And therefore Netanyahu knows he needs the Christian, particularly the Christian right in America, Canada, Sweden, Holland, much of Europe, in order to maintain his position and to continue the expansion of the Zionist agenda in Palestine.
Evangelicals also oppose the two-state solution, believing that dividing the land will incur God's disfavor.
It's Israel's strategy in the occupied territories and in Gaza. It is to depopulate them and steal more and more land. But there is absolutely no justification for the killing of civilians, for genocide, for the kind of saturation bombing we're seeing in Gaza at the moment. And Netanyahu knows that. And so he's pulling out of scripture a verse here, a verse there, to try and placate his main constituency, which is the Christian Zionist movement.
And while they're doing their thing, a thing which eventually is going to wipe out half the Jews if their rapture happens, everybody's just closing an eye to the fact that the oldest Christian community in the world is being obliterated, totally eliminated in Israel.
When you first came here in 1964, what was the percentage of Christians in the old city?
There were around 30,000 of Christians living in the old city.
And now how many are there?
Very few. So few, some 11,000 Christians out of a population of almost 800,000. Just 1.5%.
I hope you start realize what's going on. I mean, man, as traditional Catholics, you really should. If you have any sense of eschatology, any sense of the end times, of the apocalypse, of Armageddon, holy cow, man, this looks like we're heading right into it, doesn't it? Because it's all part of Bibi Netanyahu's messianic complex to make Israel somehow the new Messiah that's going to finally establish a temporal kingdom for the Jews in this world.
Israel must reserve the right to defend itself. And after all, that's the very purpose of the Jewish state, to restore to the Jewish people control over our destiny.
But Netanyahu's controversial reading of history, even his fight to preserve the state of Israel, are questioned by many of Judaism's own religious authorities.
This is against the will of the Almighty, and this is not what it means to be a Jew.
Now, that should give you pause. But if it doesn't give you pause as a Catholic, as a Christian, then what's happening to the Christians should. So let's just take a look at what is happening to Christian Palestinians at the same time.
Gaza, once flourishing at the heart of the Mediterranean Sea with its rich culture and history, now faces unprecedented devastation.
Oh,
This is Israel's collective punishment of Palestinian communities in Gaza, including its thousands-year-old Christian community. Historically an example of coexistence for various faiths, Gaza is now witnessing the eradication of its entire Christian community.
Now, I know you only have that one response that you've been using, you know, like a mantra ever since October 7th. That's Hamas propaganda. We talked about this last week. So I'm not going to even refute you on that. I'm just going to say, is the Auxiliary Bishop of Jerusalem, Monsignor William Shamali, is he a Hamas propagandist? Because here he is on your screen, and he just denounced Donald Trump's Gaza plan as one who lives there, knows something about what's going on, I would think, would know something about human shields, would know something about Israel's right to defend herself, right? And yet he says, in my view, Trump and Netanyahu intend to build settlements in Gaza, leaving only a small number of Palestinians with the option to return. Trump's announcement came as a shock to us because it makes clear what their intentions truly are regarding the future of Gaza. Already, the majority of Christians living in Gaza have seen their homes destroyed. Gaza's inhabitants are now living in one great prison. Isn't that what he's talking about? Even though he lives there, even though he sees the suffering every single day, even though he's a Catholic. And when you say that the Palestinians are all just a bunch of cockroaches, they're all a bunch of Muslim terrorists, man. Here's another fellow I hope you'll keep in mind.
I mean, the facts are very clear what is going on. First of all, I have to say that what happened 7 October is also objectively intolerable. But also what is going on in Gaza. I mean, more than 80% of the houses have been destroyed. About almost 40,000 or more, approximately 40,000 people killed. It's not the first time we have a war, but we never saw people starving as we are seeing. The proportion, I don't know, so of the violence we are assisting is something that goes beyond any understanding.
You feel like maybe you're being lied to? Because that clip was from 6 months ago. That's a Catholic cardinal trying to wake us all up. Did you even know he existed? Have you ever heard of him? Did you know he's trying to get the word out? Why is there a news blackout on prelates like these? This isn't just some angry little rebellious priest somewhere.
No electricity, no water, no sewage, no communication. And so you live in a very poor conditions and so on. And also our Christian community, they are living in the church compounds, Orthodox and Catholic, without nothing. I mean, they lost everything. And they live in the classrooms of the school. And they cook once or twice per week, and this should be sufficient for all the week. Since month, people don't eat vegetables and fruits, so you have a very evident lack of vitamins. You see also the face, and the lack of hygiene also very heavy consequences on the population, especially the fragile population, the children and the elderly, and there is no way to support, to help them. All north of Gaza, in the Gaza City, there are about 600,000 people, no hospitals, nothing.
Again, does he look like a Hamas terrorist to you? You see, while you were watching Sean Hannity over at Fox News spread his Zionist propaganda, Palestinian Christians like that, not all just Catholics, plenty of Protestant ones too, but Christians, they've been trying to break the pro-Zionist fake news for years, and nobody will listen.
Israeli politicians, the Zionist leaders, I'm sure, you know, now they think, oh, we have destroyed Gaza entirely. We've killed, you know, more than 40,000, including 16,000 children. You know, the displacement of close to 2 million, and no one held them accountable. No, it's the opposite. Netanyahu still goes to the United Nations and to the Congress. And it's not that he is treated normally, even in the Congress, he's welcomed there. So I think Israeli politicians know that the international law doesn't apply on them. And even if everything says, you know, you can go and annex the West Bank, they will still do it. And my fear is that it will turn into violence. They will still do it because they're never held accountable.
And we're saying, well, what we need to do is drop more bombs on them, because Hamas, man. So when we talk, I mean, it's important, because everybody's concerned about persecution of Christians worldwide, in Muslim countries, all over the world, right? It's like open season on Christians. Everybody's talking about it. Christians being persecuted all over the world. So it might be good for us to remember what the epicenter of that persecution is now and what it's been for a long, long time. The epicenter is Bethlehem, friends. You're Catholics, right? This should really, really make you sit up and listen. The epicenter of worldwide persecution of Christians is the place where Christ was born. The place where now nearly all the Christians have disappeared. If you want to think about something that truly has apocalyptic ramifications, how about a Christian-free Holy Land?
The decline is even more striking in Bethlehem, the birthplace of Jesus, and therefore Christianity. When the British occupation began, the city was predominantly Christian, with 80% of the population being Christian. Today, this number is around 12%. However, their population is feared to decline further as the Israeli separation wall destroys any mobility.
We have a grave concern that if something is not done urgently, that Christianity will disappear in the very land where it began, that Palestinian Christians will be eradicated in the occupied Palestinian territories. So we are deeply, deeply concerned about that.
And as the Christians disappear, the Zionists, who are persecuting the Orthodox Jews as well, but the Zionists are saying they need to all leave and the Holy Land is ours. And I know what your response is. You're going to say, well, it's the Muslims who are doing the persecuting of the Christians.
My name is Marwan Harb. I'm a Christian living in Palestine, Bethlehem. When I hear that Christians in the West are helping Israel, thinking that they are helping Christians in Palestine, I think they're mistaken. Israel is who to blame. They took everything, man. They took all your life since you were a child.
There's understanding between Christians and Muslims that live here. There's a lot of differences as well.
And who care about us? The Muslim, Muslim Palestinian, they care more than the Christian in the world. So our brother, they are the Palestinian Muslim, not the Christian in the world.
Renowned journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, who was killed by Israeli forces, was a Palestinian Christian, and her funeral witnessed disturbing attacks by the Israeli police. Additionally, Israel has been imposing high taxes on churches despite their traditionally tax-exempt status. For this reason, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre had to be closed.
Systematic and unprecedented attack against Christians in the Holy Land severely violates the most basic, ab antiquo, and sovereign rights.
The situation for Gaza's little Christian community is much worse. The community's all holy places, hospitals, and schools have been destroyed by the Israeli army since October 7th. On October 17th, Al Ali Arab Hospital was attacked. 2 days later, Gaza's oldest church, Greek Orthodox St. Porphyrius Church, was bombed. Next day, the church's compound was the target of Israeli jets. On November 13th, Gaza's Catholic Church came under fire. Several more attacks have been carried out since then.
Now, all of this to say, friends, is this Christless chaos, this war on Christians, is international, it's global, it's being fueled by the most powerful governments and corporations even in the world, right? So it's not to say that Muslims are not persecuting Christians too. Of course they are. We talk about that all the time. We had a bishop from Nigeria join us at the CIC just this past year, the Catholic Identity Conference, to talk about persecution. We're covering that as well, you know? But what you have to remember is, why is the Muslim world rising up? Well, because of things like Gaza, because of things like the U.S. backing the genocide in Gaza, don't you see?
Okay.
I was hoping for a ceasefire in Israel, in the Holy Land, a few weeks ago. But I think, as by the time you see this week's Underground, that ceasefire will probably have collapsed, and the killing will have resumed, and we will all go back to blaming Palestinians for that once again.
All right, let's talk about this. Well, the ceasefire in Gaza is getting closer to collapse. Why is that happening? Well, Israel's own media now confirming that Israel, yes, Israel, has violated the terms of the ceasefire, not Hamas. Even the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, confirmed to Israeli media that they have violated the terms of the ceasefire. Again, this is not like propaganda. They are telling us that this has happened.
Friends, I said it at the top of the show, and I truly believe it, obviously. There is an apocalyptic aspect to all of this. This is not just politics. This is a war of religions. This is a war between good and evil. This is a spiritual war, right? I mean, surely you must know this. Surely you know this. I mean, last week we spoke about the Rebbe, who for years was running around telling Benjamin Netanyahu and anybody else who would listen that Netanyahu is the one who must prepare the world for the Messiah. This was last week.
The Rebbe reportedly believed Netanyahu had a mission from God to prepare Israel for the coming of the Messiah, or in Hebrew, the Moshiach. Over the next decade, the two men developed a close relationship.
Even the Gipper, everybody's favorite conservative president, even he was involved with this, honoring this Rebbe who wanted Israel to pave the way for a Messiah that has nothing to do with Jesus Christ. Here's Ronald Reagan.
His influence was recognized by American politicians too. U.S. presidents paid homage to him, establishing and proclaiming a National Education and Sharing Day in honor of his birthday.
And please give my warmest regards to the Rebbe on this his 86th birthday.
Menachem Mendel Schneerson was born.
Donald Trump made a personal prayer visit on Monday to the Ohel, the resting place of Rabbi Menachem M. Schneerson, the former leader of the Chabad movement. Upon entering the Rebbe's tent, Trump made a donation to the movement. Wearing a kippah, Trump prayed during the visit.
If you thought you saw Ben Shapiro back there in that clip, well, you'd be right. Old Ben is all in on this, just as old Ben was all in on COVID shots, too. Just as old Ben was all in with Ukraine and Zelensky. Okay, but he's a conservative, right? Because he knows what a woman is. Yeah, and he can beat up a little college sorority girls who are 18 years old and don't have a clue. He's a conservative, man, because he's got Israel right. Now he's all in on this genocide in Gaza. As we pointed out last week, other conservative voices are finally like, what is with this guy?
If you're intentionally killing civilians, you probably shouldn't beat your chest and brag about it. You know, maybe you could make the
case. I agree
with
that.
Maybe you make the case that we had to do it or whatever, but you should.
I agree.
You should weep, and that's evil, and you should just say it's evil. And I know it's really, really threatening to.
Is it evil?
Ben Shapiro to say that or whatever.
See, none of the context ever is allowed into this discussion, right? Hamas did a terrible thing on October 7th. We all condemned it. It was evil. It was wrong, right? But you're not allowed to ask what it is that triggered these young men to do something so desperate.
My question is, how do I find compassion for these people?
Which people?
The animals that did that.
The animals that did that. So, these animals that you talk about, you know, the first massacre of Palestinians in Gaza didn't happen last year. Didn't even happen 4 or 5 years ago when they killed hundreds of children with their bombs. It happened in 1956. Just let me second. Just a second. In 1956, they massacred 200 civilians. Do you know about it? Do you know about it? You've never heard of it. Of course you haven't heard of it. That's why you can call them animals. Otherwise, you'd see them like human beings like the rest of us.
We can never forget, friends, Because if we are, we become the country that sits back and tolerates this and watches it happen and does nothing about it, doesn't care that women, and like Tucker Carlson just said, women and children are dying over there to the tens of 20, 30, 40, 50,000 for well over a year. And we're the country that just doesn't care because we've got some little narrative in our heads about what's really going on and we are the good guys and we are the justified. Think of the rage that's causing all throughout the world. Right? And it's going to impact people. It's going to, especially Christians. We can never forget, friends, where these things tend to end up if they're not checked. Never forget what happened. Like the last time, for example, that religious cleansing like this was allowed to go on unchecked.
Adolf Hitler and the people behind the regime believed that priests were one of the most dangerous groups in the Polish society. One of every two Polish priests were martyred in Dachau.
Most people, they don't even know what happened to Christians, what happened to Catholics during the Holocaust. They don't even know. It's like they don't even care. They're not allowed to care anymore because there's just one side of the narrative. And obviously, the Jews suffered a great deal. Nobody's denying that. But so did 50 million Christians. Did you know, for example, that 1,811 Polish priests died under the Nazis? Did you know that 1,034 German priests were murdered by the National Socialists at the same time? Did you know that Dachau was first set up as a political, this is the concentration camp you hear so much about, Vance just went and visited it? Do you think anybody told J.D. Vance when he went and visited Dachau a couple days ago that it had been set up for political prisoners and that the first political prisoners that were rounded up and sent there were Catholic priests to the 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, now think about that, thousands of Catholic priests put in Dachau. Thousands of Catholic priests went to Auschwitz, famously Father Maxim Kolbe, right? You know all about him. He's not the only one that anybody ever talks about, but there were thousands of them. We know their names. We have their pictures. Why? Because they were established parish priests. So every priest that was taken away by the Nazis was removed from a place, a parish, where you had 400 or 500 families that were now terrorized by what the Nazi regime was up to. So when they tell you that Christians and Catholics didn't suffer, or they knew all about it and didn't care, remember the terror that was going on for them. Imagine that in the early 1940s, pounding on the door, the Gestapo comes in and takes your priest, puts him in Dachau. You find out a few months later he got knifed, he got beheaded, he got shot, he got killed. Some of them even got crucified. As I say, we have their names. We have their pictures. We know their record. Father Kolbe's the most famous, martyred in Auschwitz, 1941. But there are so many more. Father Alois Adritsky was martyred in Dachau in 1943. Father Joseph Cibula, machine gunned to death while trying to escape, don't you know, in 1941. Father Vincent Hedluski, executed, Dachau, 1942. Father Kilian Kirchhoff, executed, Dachau, April 1944. Father Bronislaw Komorowski, murdered, March 1940. Father Hermann Lange, guillotined in a Hamburg prison, 1943. Father Friedrich Lorenz, beheaded, Dachau, 1944. Father Heinrich Mayer, executed, Dachau, 1945. Father Johann Mayer, hanged to death, 1945. Father Edward Müller, guillotined, November 1943. Father Otto Neururer, an Austrian Roman Catholic, the first priest to die in a Nazi concentration camp. His story is special. He was sent to Dachau and then later sent to Buchenwald, where he was hanged to death upside down, nailed to a tree, crucified for 36 hours before he finally succumbed and was killed by a Nazi guard named Martin Sommer. We even know the names of their executioners. Now, this list goes on and on. And maybe we'll do more work on this and try to tell the true story about what happened to these people, to our people. Now, this is, friends, this is important because we're seeing persecution against Christians rising up all over the world once again. And we just lived through it. We know it's possible. It's within the living memory of people in this audience, My own father fought in World War II. I grew up with these stories, knowing what happened. Is it okay if we remember these heroes who died because they were Catholic? Because the Nazi regime hated the Catholic Church, because the Soviet regime hated the Catholic Church, because it was always open season on the Catholic Church, whether it's Germany, Nazi Germany, the Soviet Union, Communist China. We've been through it. Tens of thousands of priests. 3 million Catholic faithful killed by the Nazis, did you know? Because they were Catholic. Religious orders, Edith Stein, famously, was certainly not the only Catholic nun to be murdered by the Nazis.
Suddenly, without cause or warning, on July 31st, 1943, 11 of the sisters were imprisoned. One night, a night that was shrouded in mystery, a night that only God knew of the facts, the sisters were packed into a van and driven beyond the limits of the town. During the early hours of the morning of August 1, 1943, the 11 sisters were shot and buried in a common grave.
6 million Polish people died. Half of them were Catholics. 1.8 million Poles were sent to the Soviet labor camps later by Soviet occupation forces, which means that many of the Catholic clergy who survived Nazi repression later died at communist hands.
Stalin was unquestionably responsible for what is sometimes called the premature death of millions of people. I mean, the estimates vary from 15 to 20 million. He was responsible. He knew what was going on. He was very much a micromanager. It's extremely important, I think, for the health of the Russian nation, of the Ukrainian nation, you know, to come to terms with these things that happened in the past so that they can go on and say, okay, we're not going to do those things anymore.
Mao Zedong, now, he was the largest mass murderer in human history. He was also the most methodical in his way of searching out Christians, torturing Catholics, letting them die in labor camps. Thanks be to God, it backfired because the Catholic Church came roaring back under the persecution of Mao. But nevertheless, the point is, persecution of Christians has been going on for a very, very long time. And who would have ever thought that we would be seriously looking at the persecution of Christians starting up right here in the United States of America? And yet it is. And it's happening to such an extent, the threat is so real, that the U.S. president himself now is trying to stop persecution of Christians at the federal level.
The mission of this task force will be to immediately halt all forms of anti-Christian targeting and discrimination within the federal government. In addition, the task force will work to fully prosecute anti-Christian violence and vandalism in our society and to move heaven and earth to defend the rights of Christians and religious believers nationwide.
So when I say there's an opportunity with Mr. Trump, there is. And I would say thank you, Mr. Trump, for this executive order. Thank you, but please, don't forget our brothers and sisters, the Christians living in Palestine.
For the Palestinian Christian community in Gaza, one of the oldest Christian communities in the world, prayer has become their last refuge. They pray for their loved ones Israel killed, for a return to their homes Israel destroyed, and for an end to Israel's relentless violence and oppression.
Again, friends, this is the evil chaos. This is what happens when Christ is uncrowned. And the only way to stop it is to crown him again. Because that's the only way. It's the only answer. You say, come on, man, get serious. That's not going to ever happen at the higher level. It's never going to happen. So knock it off. Really? Well, what if I told you that right now it's happening? It's happening already. It's called House Concurrent Resolution 3020. And it specifically states that Christ the King holds dominion over the governance of the state and of the world.
The most controversial resolution Thursday is HCR 3020, declaring Jesus Christ the King of the world. Williston Representative Nico Rios says Christianity is tied to the nation's history and should be recognized.
You know, drafters of that bill in North Dakota, they cite Matthew 20:18, of course, where Jesus declares all power is given to me in heaven and in earth, right? They cite Daniel 7:14, which predicts that Christ's ultimate authority over all nations will come, right? Now, this is right, straight Out of what? Out of Pope Pius XI's landmark encyclical on the social kingship of Jesus Christ called Quas Primus. We'll link to it down below so you can read the whole thing. Because he set it up again. He insists it is the solution. And he explains that, quote, once men recognize, both in private and in public life, that Christ is king, society will receive the great blessings of real liberty, well-ordered discipline, peace, and harmony. Do you see, he says nothing about dialogue and ecumenism and synodality, does he? He just points right at Christ the King, and he says, that's the only way. And he writes this between World War I and World War II, so he knew something about global suffering and war. And yet still, the Pope, the Holy Father in Rome, says there's only one way out. The social kingship of Jesus Christ. The thing that Freemasonry and the forces, the secret societies, have been working to destroy and tear down since 1717. They had been working on it for centuries. He knew what he was talking about. They destroyed the social kingship of Jesus Christ for a purpose, for a reason. So he knew the only way to restore harmony and peace in the world, the Pax Christi, was to rebuild and to proclaim Christ King. That's it. And the encyclical that he wrote to the world in between, again, those two wars, sandwiched between Nazism and the Soviet system, the Soviet Union, communism, that encyclical, in the end, led to the Cristeros to adopt their most famous battle cry, one that we hear quite often within traditional Catholicism, Viva Cristo Rey, a battle cry for which many priests and faithful, by the way, would be martyred, happily, rather than deny the faith. And we're not talking about a millennia ago, we're talking just 100 years ago, in the 1920s.
So the Cristeros, if you heard about the Cristeros, they were in Mexico, all right, and they were being oppressed by the government. The government wanted them to renounce their faith, to say that the state had dominion over their lives and not the Lord, which of course is a violation of the first commandment. And the Cristeros grew up and said, no, Christ is our king. He's our sovereign. He has dominion over our life. He has the victory. We belong to him. We have duties to the state. We're going to be responsible citizens. But the Lord is ultimate authority, and don't you dare take that away from him. And they began the cry, Viva Cristo Rey, long live Christ the King. Captivated Pope Pius XI, he started the Feast of Christ the King, and that we celebrate tomorrow.
He's absolutely right. I only wish His Eminence would maybe take the Cristero example to heart a little bit more, and it would follow their lead, follow the lead of the Cristeros in declaring Christ as King in a serious way, rather than leaving it up to, well, North Dakota. But nevertheless, North Dakota is a foothold. It's a start. It's the beginning, at least in this country. Bravo, North Dakota. Bravo. You have put your finger right on the solution that will save the entire world. So let's follow your lead. Let's pray that President Trump abandons this crazy Israel neocon first policy and makes America great again by doing exactly what the North Dakotans are doing, by proclaiming Christ is King, period, full stop. Because you know what? It's the only way. Everything else is a political response to a spiritual assault, which means that everything else is going to fail. Viva Cristo Rey.